Yeah. Hip, hip, Maria, oh, 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 oh. Oh, I hit it. Maria, oh, 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 Maria, oh, oh, yeah. Maria, oh, 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 Maria, oh, oh, Maria, oh, 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 Maria, oh, oh, yeah. Maria, oh, 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 Maria, oh, oh, hip, hip, hip.
You're tuned into WGXC on Wednesday, February 8th, and we have two school delays on Wednesday, February 8th, both in Ulster County. The Roundout Valley School District is delayed 2 hours, they say, because of icy roads. And the Saugerty School District is delayed 2 hours, both in Ulster County. And there are ice on the roads. You can't see it. Hopefully it's going to melt soon, but be careful out there this morning. Here are the WGXC headlines for Wednesday, February 8th. Over 11,000 people are now dead from the earthquake in Turkey. Hope is fading that more people will be rescued after several days under rubble. Israel stepped up destruction of Palestinian homes in Jerusalem. President Joe Biden exhorted Congress to work with him to, quote, finish the job, quote, unquote, of rebuilding the economy and uniting the nation during his State of the Union address February 7th. Amy Gildemeister, the Schoharie County Health Director who recommended masks and vaccines during the COVID-19 pandemic and was frozen out of her job, was hired by the State Department of Health. The Greene County Legislature unanimously adopted a local law February 6th to give a tax break to first responders. Prison officials say an inmate at the Hudson Correctional Facility in Columbia County died last week, but they are not saying how the inmate died or virtually anything else about the incident. And LeBron James broke Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's all-time scoring record in a NBA game between his Los Angeles Lakers and the Oklahoma City Thunder on February 7th.
My name is Paloma, and you are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And today we're going to hear an excerpt of last night's Catskill Town Board meeting, where WGXC always has a local web stream you can tune in at WGXC.org. We're going to hear there was talk about a proposal for three different subdivisions in the town of Catskill, and the town creating a recreational law as a way to regulate those applications to become new subdivisions in the town of Catskill. We'll hear an excerpt of last night's meeting. You can hear the full meeting online at WGXC.org. We'll also hear the Green Party's response to the Joe Biden's State of the Union address last night. We'll hear the better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate and the national headlines from the Public News Service. And it all starts after Jason Martin from Troy has finished singing this song on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On Saturday, February 11th, learn about the history of chocolate in the Hudson Valley.
from 1 to 2 p.m. at the Hudson Area Library. Culinary historian Peter G. Rose speaks on the history of chocolate in the Hudson Valley at the Hudson Area Library on Saturday, February 11th. There will be free samples of locally made chocolate from Verdigris Tea and Chocolate Bar and other local businesses at the event. That is Saturday, February 11th, the history of chocolate in the Hudson Valley at the Hudson Area Library at 1 p.m. Find out more in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-I's into here's how you cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Spike's Record Rack in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Wednesday, February 8th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. While most elections are held in the fall and some occasionally in March, the Chatham School District is polling its electorate about a 2023 capital improvement project proposal during a time when few people are thinking about voting. Polls are open on February 14th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. in the MED Elementary School gym. There are two propositions on the ballot in Chatham. Quote, Prop 1 is a $18,218,595 proposal to shore up aging infrastructure, improve classroom and community spaces, and address safety, security, and health concerns. The proposed work would take place at Chatham High School, Chatham Middle School, Mary E. Dardis Elementary School, and the Bus Garage, unquote. The school district would apply the $8,434,944 in capital reserves and issue bonds for taxpayers to pay for the remainder of the cost. Quote, Proposition 2 would authorize the district to install a building-wide air conditioning HVAC system at the Mary E. Dardis Elementary School at a cost to not exceed $3,879,600, unquote. Proposition 2 is dependent on the passage of Proposition 1. So if voters do not approve Proposition 1, Proposition 2 will not pass. If voters approve Proposition 1 but do not approve Proposition 2, only the work under Proposition 1 would be completed. See the Chatham School District website for more information about the budget proposals before voters take to the polls on February 14th. Joshua Solomon reports in the Times Union that Republican Lee Zeldin would not say if he is running against U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand in the 2024 election, but he also would not say that he is not. Zeldin spoke at his first news conference on February 6th since losing to Governor Kathy Hochul in last fall's election. Zeldin said it is Gillibrand that is floating the rumor that he would run. Quote, she's trying to create a sense of urgency with donors, unquote, Zeldin told reporters in front of a crowd of Conservative Party members in Albany. Quote, they know it would be a pretty epic clash if I decided to do it, unquote. Gillibrand's campaign team said in a fundraising email last month that, quote, Zeldin very nearly won the New York governorship in the 2022 midterms, all while New York Republicans had their best election cycle in two decades, flipping enough House seats red to retake the majority, unquote. Right now, Zeldin says he is starting a new federal political action committee. Quote, I do believe that at some point there will be a reentry to government, unquote, Zeldin said. Quote, exactly what that will be and when we'll see, unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. The Troy Record reports that Representative Paul Tonko, a Democrat who represents Albany County and the rest of the 20th Congressional District, recently introduced bipartisan legislation for research on Alzheimer's disease and supporting scientists in the development of treatments and potential cures. H.R. 619 and 620 are the National Alzheimer's Project Act, Reauthorization Act, and the Alzheimer's Accountability and Investment Act. Tonko and Republican Chris Smith from New Jersey hope to get the non-controversial bills passed. Both bills have passed previously and expire in 2025, so extending them could be bipartisan. Read the full story in the Troy Record. Kate Lisa reports at New York State of Politics that hundreds of home care workers rallied with several lawmakers at the state capitol on February 6th for a rise in home care salaries. Quote, we do toileting, meal prep, tube feeding, medication management, yet the state does not pay us enough, and it's causing a huge worker shortage, unquote, said Zulma Torres, a home health care aide at Cooperative Home Care Associates in New York City. Quote, older adults and disabled people are not getting the care they need. Last year, the governor acknowledged we are in a home care crisis, but her budget shows she is actively choosing to worsen this dangerous shortage, unquote. Last year's New York State budget included pay increases of $3 an hour for home workers, but many workers from across the state claim they have not seen those increases from their employers. Hochul spokesperson Justin Mason said in a statement on February 6th that, quote, Governor Hochul believes that all New Yorkers deserve to be paid fairly, including home health care workers. There is nothing in her budget that would reduce wages for home health care workers, unquote. There is also not anything that would raise wages for home health care workers in that budget. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, February 8th. Local early morning temperatures range from 31 degrees in Copaic to 39 in Medusa. Regional average soil temperature is 33 degrees. Winds today put the morning conditions at freezing, but just cold for the afternoon. A high of 43 happens at 3 p.m. Overnight, we barely dip below freezing, hitting 31 degrees, and that's going to keep tomorrow wet, but not snowy, at least down on the ground. It will rain all day. Up in the hills, expect some sleet and maybe a mix. We get a high of 41 degrees at 5 p.m. Mercury keeps creeping up overnight, hitting 45 degrees. Friday is looking nice, dry, with 50 for a high, but winds are going to keep those heading outdoors wrapped up in layers. Saturday, still dry, but a high of only 39. Sunset today will be at 5:03 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:56 a.m. Looking way up, we see flare chances are increasing with a couple dark cores drifting across the surface of the sun. X-class flare chances are at 5%. I would expect that to go up. Solar wind speed is currently 525 kilometers per second at a very light 0.6 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3.6. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 110. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
This is deprogramming from the Universal Media Network. Keep saying Joe McCarthy, you want to do that?
On Tuesday, February 7th, the town of Catskill held one of its regular meetings, and WGXC always has a live webcast of those meetings. Here's an excerpt of that meeting where there was talk about proposals for three new subdivisions in the town of Catskill and creating a recreational law to sort of have a way for the town to regulate those subdivisions as they come to the town of Catskill. For much of the meeting, you'll hear from Catskill Town Attorney Theodore Hilscher.
New business, recreation development plan. I'm going to turn it over to our town attorney, and he gives some background of what that's about.
So this came up, this whole issue came up in front of the planning board because we have you know, we go years without a major subdivision application, and all of a sudden we have three in front of us. And so there is a there are provisions in town law for subdivisions to either set aside land for recreational use, or if they don't have the land in their subdivision, the planning board can require that they make a payment to the town recreational fund. And I guess we don't have a recreational fund yet. You need to, in order to go to an applicant and tell them that you want them to make a contribution, you know, the law requires certain things. It's town law 277. It requires the town to have identified the need for a recreational plan, and then the planning board has to go through, they have to make a finding that they looked at the subdivision, and the subdivision is going to, you know, increase the population in the town, and, you know, it would be helpful to the town if, you know, the town has recognized that there's some recreational needs, and, you know, they could ask for a contribution. In order for you to get, you can't just tell them, you know, you have to give us, if you want a subdivision, you have to pay us X number of dollars. You can't do that. But if you have a recreational plan in place, you know, and you can tie the development of the subdivision to the need and the benefit that would take place in the recreational plan, then something like that is going to, if they decide to challenge it, the town is going to be on pretty good grounds because you have a recreational development plan. So Councilman Jared wanted me to develop this by tonight, which I did. I met with Dale, and you know, we basically looked at, we talked a little bit about Ricky Kramer, we talked a little bit about the 5 Mile Woods. There was a map that was done, a nice map by Cloud Harper in 2007. So I put that all into our development. Now, this isn't to say that, you know, if you adopt this, this doesn't mean that you're going to do every single thing that's on here. This is just a plan, and you identify a need to have more recreation in the town. I also went ahead and I did a little bit of research on my own. I looked at the town comprehensive plan. There's some language in the town comprehensive plan that talks about it's desirable in the town to have recreational space. It's desirable in the town to have open space. I looked at National Recreation Park Association, which is a national advocate for recreational use, and they recommend 10 acres of community parkland per 1,000 residents. We have, as best as I can determine in the town, outside of the village, in the last census, you have 7,500 people. I think that's accurate. I think you have about 11,000 in the town, but I think that includes the village. So outside of the village, does that sound right? So outside the village, you have 7,500 people, which means you would have, according to those recommendations, you would want to have 75 acres of parkland. We have 9 acres of parkland. Ricky Kramer is 9.64 acres. So there's definitely a need. The need has been identified in based on your comprehensive plan. Based on the recommendations that this national organization has recommended, so I put that all in this plan. And if this sounds like a plan, well, that's all it has to be at this point. You're not allocating any money. All you're doing is you're giving the planning board the ability to set up, to direct the applicants to contribute to this trust fund. And it's a relatively nominal amount. And I'll give you a a real life, for instance, that there's a subdivision on Mossy Hill Road that we would be assessing, hypothetically, we would be assessing 10% of unimproved value. Now, other towns do this. They assess 10% of the approved value. This is much more, you know, non-intrusive. This
it's
is
not kind of, a prohibitive number.
It's not a prohibitive number. It's not a confiscatory number. Where so 10% of this particular, you know, unimproved land would be $8,000. So that's $8,000. There's another subdivision in Leeds. If that gets approved, that's another $8,000. So now you have the beginning of a trust fund. And so in order for the planning board to go ahead and do that, you have to adopt some type of a plan. So I have this, I provided you with a plan, and then I gave you a resolution which, you know, basically says what I just said.
How much property is there in the 5 mile
I don't know. How much is it?
I don't know, it's 300. Yeah, it's like 300 acres.
Well, if we could actually one day have a real community center.
Well, let's be very cautious with 5 mile. Last time this was brought up in 2007, it wasn't pretty in here. The most conversations were happening. And that's why that project didn't go through. Because of the way it was presented, the lack of communication with the public. Mm-hmm. So we just got to be very cautious with that.
You could very easily, as a beginning, you could just have a trail in there and just have a walking trail. It would be non-invasive. You know, I mean, that's the easiest.
I mean, I think the easiest, in my opinion, would be 23B. I know it's in the floodplain, but you make a dog park where if it floods, so what? But at least, I mean, there's nothing else we can do with that property. It's forever green.
Right. We had little congress, but like I said, the land that we had, I believe it was through FEMA, through IRB.
Yeah,
we have a couple acres on the Leeds Flats. It's kind of, and there's probably a couple of wells because of the homes are in the pits that we needed. If we needed to draw water, if we were interested in a dog park, there would be it is pretty close to the hamlets, and it's on a major road. And the other one that we really did discuss is at the old landfill property on Quarter Scale. But again, we do own outright the land on either one of those two sites would be good. I think
the important step is getting this set up so we can start building a fund so we can look at these properties down the road and say, let's put in a...
Right. Because as this develops...
A community pool, or let's put in a...
Right. It's got to be a diverse activity type of thing, so it's not, you know, you got to offer something for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not...
I mean, it's okay if you do something like a dog, but then you got to say, what's that other...
This section of the dog park,
but
over here.
Right, but you might put like, you know, other towns might have a little track around it so people can, you know, maybe walk, you know, the perimeters of those properties and things of that nature. I mean, that probably isn't big enough on the Leeds Flats for that, but...
I mean, an outdoor basketball park at Ricky Graham would be nice.
Right, I mean, some of the floated ideas of a pickleball.
I was just going to say, yeah, pickleball.
Pickleball, that's good for...
Pickleball.
It's a short tennis court.
It's like a tennis sort.
It's half. Right? I think it's a half tennis.
It's a mixture between racquetball and tennis.
And if you have a tennis court and a blacktop, it doesn't take that much to really, have a little fencing. But again, that's something that we may have room for down there, as an example.
I think this is a great idea.
No, it's good. I mean, most communities that I've been familiar with in my career, I mean, there are larger scale developments, and they do make a little pocket park, like some little pavilions and playgrounds, and you know, if they got 100. 150 residents coming in or lots.
I mean, it would also give us a fund if we wanted to acquire property in town or somewhere to put a park.
Yeah, because you're allowed to use the fund for acquisition.
Agitpop was an art punk band from Poughkeepsie, formed in 1981 with albums on Twin Tone, Rough Trade, and other labels. Here is Poughkeepsie's Agitpop with On the Hudson on the radio at WGXC. We'll be right back.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, lore following our democracy in historic times.
In his State of the Union, Joe Biden must answer for his failed leadership. Whether it's the border crisis continuing to rage at our southern border, crushing inflation and over $30 trillion in national debt.
While President Joe Biden used his State of the Union speech to outline his economic plans, the COVID-19 recovery, and stressing the need for bipartisanship, House Republicans, including New York's Elise Stefanik, pressed Biden to address GOP priorities. Republican Missouri Representative Jason Smith argued speaking with everyday Americans is the best way to determine what issues need to be addressed. Meanwhile, Democrats were eager to hear the president's speech and capitalize on progress made in the past year. Texas Democrat Veronica Escobar said her caucus knows there is more work ahead, but believes Republican infighting will cause confusion and delay. She contended Democrats are trying to be bipartisan, but the sentiment isn't being returned.
We are willing to work with any Republican when and if they decide to put the American people first.
U.S. Customs and Border Patrol agents testified before the House Oversight and Accountability Committee about the border crisis. Democrats spoke about how more fentanyl is getting stopped at the border, but Republicans noted the number of people carrying drugs into the country is unclear. Florida Democrat Jared Moskowitz lamented the disconnect between the parties.
All we're doing in this hearing is politicizing another issue in this country that doesn't need to be politicized. We all agree that fentanyl is a problem.
Constituents of New York's 3rd Congressional District rallied in Washington to call for the removal of their elected representative, George Santos. In the wake of numerous scandals, including accusations of lying about his credentials and personal life during the campaign, the House Ethics Committee is investigating, and the Republican chair of his district has called for him to resign. Co-founder of the group Concerned Citizens of NY03, Jody Cass Finkel, said Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy can no longer ignore their pleas for Santos's resignation.
We are here because Speaker McCarthy apparently cannot hear us when we speak from Long Island. Speaker McCarthy, you're turning a deaf ear to our needs, but the country is beyond giving Santos the benefit of the doubt.
As political fights continue on the debt ceiling, Chairman of the Federal Reserve Jerome Powell doesn't want anyone to think the Federal Reserve can shield financial markets or their economy from delays in the process. He said there is only one way it can end.
This really can only end one way, and that is with Congress raising the debt ceiling in a timely fashion so that the U.S. can pay all of its bills when and as due. That's what has to happen.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We reported that the new majority on the North Carolina Supreme Court questionably agreed to rehear 2 cases, one of which later became Moore versus Harper, the most important democracy case in decades. For better or worse, what the North Carolina court decides may impact all U.S. voters. In Harper v. Hall, the North Carolina High Court threw out the gerrymandered state House, Senate, and congressional voting district maps in 2022. State Republicans argued Moore v. Harper last December in the U.S. Supreme Court using a fringe independent state legislature interpretation of the U.S. Constitution, giving legislatures ultimate control over elections. That power would trump the state's constitution, the courts, and even a governor's veto over redistricting, voting rules, and election statutes. Here's the plot twist. It's likely the rehearing of Harper v. Hall will result in it being overturned, bad for North Carolina. But it could also make Moore v. Harper moot in the U.S. Supreme Court, where only 3 of 9 justices seem sympathetic to the sketchy ISL legal argument. Democracy scholar Richard Hassan suggests it is a Republican calculus to get a likely result in North Carolina in the short term and bring another stronger ISL case to the U.S. justices later. NPR reports Ohio legislators are already preparing one. So moot doesn't necessarily mean good news for democracy. Find resources at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Next, here is 2022 new music from Karen Schomer, the Columbia County-based poet and sound artist Peter Taylor. Their album is called Agro Dulce, and this song is called Do You Remember the Factory That Burned?
This road wasn't here. This alley wasn't here. The stream became a reservoir. The flood came down the hill past the Catholic Church. This was a stream. It shouldn't be a lake. The bridge is too low. Water can rise past it. Dead branches clog the dam. Sunlight grazes pasture, which was woods, which was a farm, which was a factory. A wall, a plain old wall. The new map lies on the old map. We set the clocks back. A different sun rises over a different ridge. I fall asleep and levitate. Trees lift the roof off the house. I sleep with pines. Their branches are sturdy, but unkind. Love you anymore. I don't.
Joe McPhee is a renowned saxophonist who resides in Poughkeepsie, and his Nation Time album, originally released in 1970 and reissued in the year 2000, is a jazz classic. Now, in 2022, the band More Mother, on their album Jazz Codes, has a song called Joe McPhee Nation Time Intro.
Purple, peaches, pumpkin pie. All y'all ready? Holler, scream, shout. It's Nation Time. It's Nation Time. It's Nation Time for real.
Yo, cops and patrol cars, cops on the beat. We'll be standing on the corners. We'll be marching in the street. Helicopters overhead. Another brother shot dead. What time is it? It's Nation Time. Racist fascists in our White House. Neo-Nazis in the streets. We got miles to go and promises to keep. Culture vultures in our beds. Another bullet in our heads. What time is it? It's Nation Time.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Peter Lavigne as the co-chair of the Green Party of New York State. I'll mention he's also assistant professor of political science at SUNY Oneonta. So we thought he would be good to give sort of a green perspective on the President Biden's annual State of the Union address that's taking place on February 7th. Certainly the expectation is that President Biden will talk, you know, about the war with in the Ukraine and with Russia and shooting down balloons with China, offer an olive branch to the Republicans now that they have control of the House. And you expect them, I think most of the political pundits, what will he say about whether or not he's going to run for re-election? But we thought we'd be good to give some alternative viewpoints. So, Peter, if the Green Party had managed to be delivering the State of the Union address, you know, rather than the Democrats, what are some of the key issues that the Green Party would be focusing upon?
The first that we talk about is the climate crisis. And it's really, you know, a planetary ecological emergency. Biden wants to pat himself on the back for the Inflation Reduction Act. But this is something that the Greens talked about last year. It doesn't go far enough, and it gives major concessions to oil and gas industries in terms of drilling and new leases, and doesn't really prevent a lot of the environmental damage that's being done to frontline communities. We need to transition now to 100% renewable, not in 15 years, not in 20 years. Biden's approach is far too slow. And so we really need to talk about climate really, really, really fast and move towards a renewable energy economy. And that's what a green president would talk about first. We'd also obviously talk about the economy. We need to deal with the fact that people are struggling. You know, Biden's going to come out and say, oh, the economy is wonderful. And, you know, unemployment's down as far as it's been since 1969. But people are still dealing with the effects of inflation on basic goods, right? They're still dealing with struggling to get by in most areas in terms of housing costs, childcare costs, healthcare costs. We need a real Green New Deal to put people back to work and to transition the economy, give them living wage job. We need to talk about healthcare. Biden's going to talk about the COVID-19 emergency going away in May. But what he's not going to talk about is how expensive all of those life-saving drugs and vaccines are going to be for many people afterwards, how expensive healthcare is. We saw during the COVID crisis, which is still ongoing, that government healthcare can and does work. We want single-payer universal coverage. Biden's not going to talk about that. We also want Biden to talk about gun violence. I mean, this is ongoing. He needs to declare a national emergency on that. Biden needs to declare a climate emergency, right? He needs to move to federally legalize marijuana, right? I mean, this is something people have been clamoring for as well. These are things that a green president would talk about. Same thing with education, right? We need free college education for all. Get rid of that debt, not this $20,000 that's being held up in the courts.
Now, one of the big issues in many states, but certainly New York, has been the issue of housing and affordable housing. It certainly has been driving a homeless crisis, which has become sort of the symbolic, at least for the Republicans, to really make it a crime type of issue because so many people, you know, out on the streets. What's a green housing program?
The green housing program is simply to say that the market is not going to take care of this, right? The market has caused this problem. We need a number of things. One, I think, you know, what's floating around in New York State, and even Governor Hochul has talked about it, is the fact that we need more housing units, and that's true. But we need social housing. You know, this is something that they have in other countries, especially in Europe, where people of all incomes can actually have units in public housing, right? And it can look many, many different things. It might be apartments in New York City. It might be, you know, single or dual family houses upstate. But we need inexpensive houses that don't have costs that rise with gentrification. We need to build them and we need to do that publicly. You know, I think that the granny flat kind of conversation that went on, the accessory dwelling unit conversation, I think that's a smart conversation to have. And I think that needs to happen as well. We also need rent control. In places like New York City, where rents are just, sky high and skyrocketing. We know that, landlords are keeping housing units off the market. They have to be forced to rent those out to people, especially because they're low cost public housing or rent controlled housing units. So it's a multi-pronged, multifaceted approach that brings the public into it and begins to democratize access to housing rather than what I think Governor Hochul and President Biden want, which is to simply kind of throw the door open to developers. And that isn't going to really solve the problem that we see here in New York State.
Now, I know the Greens are supporting, I believe it's the Just Cause Eviction Law, which Albany, City of Albany has passed, but it's not yet been passed at the state level. But let's switch to foreign policy for just a moment. Obviously, the war in Ukraine continues. Greens are a peace party. I know in the peace community, there's difference of opinions on how to respond to the Russian invasion. But, looking at this proxy war with Russia, looking at seems to be the desire to go to some type of military confrontation with China, shooting down their weather balloons or whatever they were. What's the Greens peace agenda?
Look, the Greenpeace agenda hasn't changed. We are a party of peace and nonviolence, and we believe in diplomacy before stoking the fires of war. We believe that the U.S. military budget, which is now over $800 billion, needs to be radically slashed. We need to bring the troops home from overseas and redirect that money to social programs. The U.S. is an imperialist country. We have military bases in every continent. We have over 750 to 1,000 bases, depending how you count it, overseas. You know, we are the premier threat to the world, right? You know, when it concerns Ukraine or China, yeah, the peace community can be divided. But I think what we can agree on is that the United States should be on the phone. President Biden should be on the phone with Vladimir Putin and talking about a peaceful solution to that conflict. We should also, you know, not be stoking the fires of war there by simply pouring more and more weaponry into it. We should be talking about how do we end this without more lives lost. And I think the same thing with China. You know, we are intertwined with China in terms of our economy. And we do not want China and Russia are both nuclear powers. This kind of conflict is very dangerous. And we don't need to be playing this kind of brinksmanship game. We need diplomacy. We need to talk. We need to figure out where we can meet on these issues without fighting and ramping up nationalism and military spending.
So I'm going to ask you a two-part question and give you 90 seconds. One is, you're a college professor. What are students, you know, looking for these days? And then second, in terms of the politics, United States Congress, very partisan polarization between the Democrats and Republicans as the two major corporate parties. How do the Greens think, you know, democracy and political parties should, you know, expand the United States? And
I, you know, teach a number of students introductory courses in American government, and every semester, you know, students are hungry to learn about government, but having conversations with them, they don't feel that there's any access to it for regular people like them, or especially young people. You know, they're worried about the climate crisis. They're worried about the student debt crisis. Students want access to government. They want a democratized access to government. They know that the government is dominated by corporations and by the wealthy and by older people. So you know, I think a lot of people say, oh, students are tuned out, they don't vote. I don't think that's, you know, that's really true of what they want out of politics. They're just very disillusioned, like a lot of the rest of the country, but they want a more open democracy, and they're worried about the environmental problems. You know, in terms of the government, you know, we want single payer healthcare. We want public financing of elections. We want proportional representation. This polarization is really polarization between parties about how best to dominate and exploit American workers and the environment, because that's who funds the Democrats and Republicans. We need more voices and choices, and the Greens are for expanding access and getting money out of politics.
Peter Lavigne, Green Party of New York, gpny.org, nationally gp.org. This has been Mark Dunley, who's involved, the Green Party, should say, for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that an inmate at the Hudson Correctional Facility in Columbia County died last week, but prison officials are not saying how the inmate died or virtually anything else about the incident. State Police spokesperson Trooper Aaron Hicks said the incident was being treated as an, and I quote, unattended death, end quote. That means no officials or medical personnel were present at the death. But Hicks declined to give any more information, saying it was an ongoing investigation. The state police, the Attorney General's office, the Department of Corrections and Community Supervision's Office of Special Investigations, and the State Commission of Corrections are all investigating the death, as they would any death in a state prison. There were 113 incarcerated at the Hudson Correctional Facility as of February 6, but little other information about the death is being released by public officials. Read the full story in the Times Union. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that while Governor Kathy Hochul may be saying she wants no new taxes besides a cigarette tax increase, Assemblyperson Sarah Hanna Shrestha wants to raise the tax rate on wealthy businesses to generate more than $9 billion. Shrestha, an Ulster County Democrat first elected last fall, is co-sponsoring the legislation with Assemblyperson Anna Kellis, a Democrat from Ithaca. Shrestha, who is former chair and still member of the Hudson Valley chapter of the Democrat Socialists of America, said, and I quote, "Corporations have no problem jacking up prices and asking consumers to pay for inflation. Private utilities like Central Hudson have no problem raising rates, even as its parent company, Fortis, boasts of record profits. ExxonMobil, Johnson & Johnson, and Amazon continue to line their pockets on the back of working families who are struggling to make ends meet. We need to tax corporations so that we can claim what is rightly ours," end quote. In 2021, New York temporarily raised the corporate income tax rate from 6.5% to 7.25% for companies with more than $5 million in business income base. Her office said in a press release, and I quote, "This minor adjustment raised hundreds of millions in revenue each year, but the law expires in 2023, end quote. Shrestha wants to go further with an 8% tax on corporations with a business income base of over $2.5 million, a 12% tax on corporations with an income base of over $10 million, and a 14% tax on companies with an income base over $20 million. Shrestha said, and I quote, "Even with the temporarily increased tax rate of 7.25%, New York is still behind 10 other states, including Vermont, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, who tax at higher rates," end quote. Hochul, though, seems uninterested in raising taxes on the wealthy. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Nick Reisman reports for Spectrum New York that New York sales tax revenue rose 12.7% last year, bringing in $22.1 billion, according to Comptroller Tom DiNapoli's office. DiNapoli said, and I quote, "The pandemic created significant sales tax volatility over the past few years, first with a major decline, then with a strong rebound," end quote. The story says, and I quote, "Sales tax growth has remained strong for a sustained stretch as consumers resumed spending relatively quickly after pandemic shutdowns ended. Additionally, the state implemented policies just before the pandemic that ensured more online sales were being fully taxed. Most county governments saw increases that ranged from 4 to 10%, end quote. Read more about this story in Spectrum News. Porcupine Soup reports that Republican Representative Mark Molinaro, who now represents New York 19th, announced February 6th the opening of a local office, including one in Greene County in Leeds. The others are in Binghamton, Liberty, Hancock, and Oneonta. Molinaro said, and I quote, "Constituent services and accessibility is our top priority. These offices will provide upstate New Yorkers with an important access point to our constituent service team who can help with a variety of federal issues. I encourage upstate New Yorkers to use our office as a resource. We are here to help," end quote. The Leeds office will be open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Leeds office is at 59 Gilfeather Park Road off of Main Street in Unit 1. The office can be reached at 585-625-2100. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the Donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Wednesday, February 8th. And we begin each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Cumberland Farms in Cairo has the lowest price of gas at $3.57 a gallon, according to the Gas Buddy website. The air quality forecast on Wednesday is a 19. That's low. The UV index is a 2. That is low, but for the winter, it's sort of a high number. The water temperature in the Hudson River in Albany is at 38.09. Over the past 10 years on this date, it has averaged 36.09. So it is a full 2 degrees warmer than normal right now in the Hudson River. National Weather Service in Albany predicts a cloudy Wednesday, gradually becoming sunny with a high of 39 and a northwest wind 13 to 17 miles per hour spinning local windmills. The forecast tonight is for partly cloudy skies with a low around 30 and a west wind around 6 miles per hour. Thursday, there is a 90% chance of rain, mainly after 10 a.m., with a high of 39 and a light southeast wind becoming south 17 to 22 miles per hour in the morning, with wind gusts could go as high as 32 miles per hour for those windmills. Thursday night, there's a 50% chance the rain continues before 1 a.m. Then it's cloudy with a low around 39 with a south wind 18 to 22 miles per hour with gusts as high as 32 miles per hour for the windmills. Friday should be partly sunny with a high of 44 and a west wind 17 to 23 miles per hour with gusts as high as 36 miles per hour for the windmills with a low around 28 on Friday night. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears. We repeatedly say that anybody can call in and have their say on the radio at WGXC, and one local citizen, Wayne Coe from Chatham, did recently to talk about the coming school bond election in Chatham. Here's Wayne Coe talking with WGXC host Kieran Riley on the WGXC afternoon show.
We are going to, looks like we are going to Wayne Coe over Zoom right now. Can you hear me, Wayne?
I hear you. Can you hear me over Zoom?
Unbelievable. We did it. We did it. We did it. However, I cannot see you, but that's all right. Unfortunately,
that's you're sharing your screen. So you need to take a screen share.
All right, but I need to be able to do that for musical purposes. So we're just going to rock and roll. Wayne Coe, we played a little song that you sent me, Stop the Steal. I was very impressed with your punk musical antics.
My solo production value.
It's pretty cool. So why don't you just fill us in right now, Wayne, and tell us what is going on in Chatham? We had you a couple of years ago where there was a huge school budget issue. There was a multi-million dollar project
going on. We're back to bond. Corruption. So if you live in the Chatham Central School District, there is an $18.2 million bond. They're trying to slide past you in the dark of winter with no notice. I got my flyer 2 weeks ago. I got my flyer a week ago. The vote is on Valentine's Day. It's a new St. Valentine's Day massacre for the homeowner. So I'm encouraging you to go in and vote on February 14th, Valentine's Day, on this bond.
So this is actually, this is a public service announcement, because regardless on, you know, that this is what community radio is for, actually, regardless on which side of the fence and which way you lean, this, that, left, right, center, or whatever, you could be extreme center, who knows?
Yeah.
The point is that what part of what you're bringing to the table today, which we definitely always appreciate, is making people aware of the democratic process in which they supposedly live, which involves voting on very serious issues. And when there's an $18.2 million vote on Valentine's Day, that the people, it sounds like the people actually have a say in voting on this thing. How does that work?
They have a say if they can vote. The job of the school is to not let anyone know that this election is going on, that in the middle of winter on February 14th, you can vote at the Mary E. Dardis Elementary School. Your choice. If you think you want an $18.2 million second mortgage on your home, vote for it. You know, for me, I'm going to vote against it. But the main strategy of the company, the school, the company does not want anyone to come in, or as few as possible. The company's power is vested in their voting block. The employees of the school, their sisters, cousins, and aunts represent what I call the union voting block. This voting block in a general election, when there's not a lot of excitement, represents a 2.5 to one advantage to them, to the company. So they're very advantaged if you're demoralizing, what's the point going in and voting? In this case, it's a huge point. You save yourself vast amounts of money, $18.2 million, and you have the power to vote on February 14th, Valentine's Day. So my hope is that this will reach some Chathamites, some people in Kindergarten Ghent, all the people in the Chatham Central School District have the right and should use their power to vote, because this is a very important vote. So my sole reason to come on is to say, you probably haven't heard about this. And it's really essential, and that's what's so great about you, Kieran, in the station, is that people can go and remind people, ring the bell, let them know, get the clarion call that this, major bond is happening, but they've gotten, as little notification as legally possible. And so that was a flyer in my mail a week ago, waking me up.
All right, here is 2022 new music from U.S. Girls, or Us Girls, depending on how you want to pronounce it. The song is called So Typically Now, on the radio at 90.7 FM, WGXC.
Typically now, I'll send you an image if you would just come.